First of all, I mainly work in photography, but in a way I've been hesitant to call myself only a photographer since it is a very new medium, and sometimes because it is a new medium, artists who do photography are sometimes, in Mexico especially, too concerned with the forms of the medium itself. And I'm not necessarily concerned with them so much, even though I come from a very strict photographic environment, because I that's where my formation comes from, that's where my background. But more and more I'm interested in things that are wider than the photographic medium as such. So I'm going to show you a few things of my work, and then I'm going to show you a little preview. It's very, very little, because I really haven't even begun to work properly here. I've done a few things, but they're like tests. Some of the themes in my work that are evolving are the relationship between man and nature. So in a way, there is a concern about how difficult or conflicted this relationship has been throughout history, and the way we tell history as the quote dominating species. But I prefer subtlety, so there isn't any aspect of my work that is obviously about ecological preoccupations or the state of the world as such. So I'm more concerned with like the spiritual aspect of how humans relate to nature as something that is both other than us, because we perceive it as such culturally, and something that is of course us, that we are part of nature, but there is also always this conflict between the natural, the artificial, the cultural, and the natural world, and how we live in it, relate to it, and make our lives and our history and our civilization based on all these concepts and all this conflict. So this work is called Terrestrial Environment, and it was made in the Museum of Natural History in Mexico City. Now, these dioramas, they come from the context of natural sciences in the 19th century, and they're part of this idea of the cabinet of curiosities and the idea of the illustrated man and science and progress, and this idea that we can control the forces of nature towards progress and towards a better life for everyone. And it's also the time of discoveries. So without much rigor, the cabinets of curiosities were all these places where the travelers and the explorers and the scientists would be collecting things and arranging them and displaying them. And in that context, the dioramas arise, which are these places that are, I find that there's a particular tension in them, in the sense that it's something totally artificial that is striving to depict nature in its untouched state. So of course it's a failure, it's a big failure, and of course it's displaying dead animals, which have been romanticized to fit the human notion of wild, which is a romantic notion. Mm-hmm. So this is like an anthropomorphic depiction of nature, but it's trying to hide the fact that it's a fiction. It's trying to hide the fact that it's everything is artificial. So the first shot is made in a frontal position, that is where the person that goes to the museum will normally look at the diorama. And all the elements of the diorama are arranged to be looked at from this angle. And then the second shot of the diorama is kind of a behind the scenes, where the camera is inside the space and is pointing towards the glass. So all the elements of fiction become very obvious and apparent, like all the lights and the crates of wood and everything which is fake becomes so very, very clearly. Like in this shot, you can see a little ghost here. And that's from a spotlight in a diorama that's right opposite to this. And it would have been very easy to block that out with a piece of black cloth. But I was interested in them showing up like that. So there's something in these spaces that maybe at first glance, when you look at it like really, really fast, you might think you're looking at a... Well, this is too obvious. This is like the giraffe is way too close. It's too obvious. But some of these shots, when you look at them, you might think you're looking at a photograph of the African savanna, of whatever ecosystem. And then immediately there's something also that maybe tells you there's something off, that it doesn't work, that it's, you know, they're too stiff, they're too close to each other, there's something that with the colors that's just not working. So in between these two readings, I think some of the tension lies. And of course, then you pass to this, which kind of makes it really obvious. So this for me has to do with, again, this idea of the very accidented history of relationship between humans and the rest of the species on the planet. So in a sense, it's this play, it's this theater, it's this drama that's been put on by humans with these dead animals that are frozen for years and years and years. The dioramas here, they were made in the 60s. And they're actually patrimonio, like a national heritage protected space.
Yeah. Makes me think of, there was a project not a long time ago where they put a truck Finnish forest. Mm-hmm. And then they took that to London and everything, and people could go and walk in a forest. And I was like, what is this madness that, you know, like people go and experience the forest thing behind the truck, you know? And this gives me the same kind of a feeling, like, it's like it tells more about us than the nature.
Uh-huh, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, yeah, this tension between artificial and natural.
An alienation of nature.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. And also the discourse that, in a way, legitimizes the context of natural history.
Yes.
Yeah. This, I started doing it in 2009, and it went for about 3 years. I used to work in the museum on Monday when it's closed to the public. Okay. So I talked to the director of the museum and I showed him the idea. And he said yes. So I was going on Mondays, not every Monday, but I was going on Monday and I was doing this series, and I'm going to show you another work that I did that's like complementary. So some of these images, when I see them, it's like, for me, the animals, it's almost like they're coming to the end of their natural environment, like their world, like if they were really alive. It's like they're walking in the jungle and then suddenly there's a wall. You know,
and the spots,
so they're very startled. It's like that movie, like the Truman Show, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This was almost like an art form. There were people who were specialists in it's like a bóveda, it's a vault.
Yeah,
so it has that effect of 3D a little bit, but then it's also like very 2D at the same time.
Yeah.
And this place, it's kind of dodgy. It's not that well done. If you go to the Natural History Museum in New York or in many other places, the dioramas are perfect.
Mm.
They're so well done.
Yeah.
These ones are like...
But that's the also the delight of it. That is a bit dodgy. Yeah.
So there's something also kind of humorous about it.
Mm.
It's a little bit kitschy, a little bit humorous, a little bit sad. Okay, so if the first series that I showed you is very much about wide open spaces and detail, and there's many things happening and many planes, this is kind of the opposite. These are individual portraits, very subdued lighting. This I was doing with a background and some studio lights in the museum. And the people in the museum would help me bring the specimens. So we would do like one and then the other for many sessions. And the idea behind this is, in a way, to try to depict the animal as though it was alive. Some people, the first time that that they see them, think that they're actually alive. And also to kind of try to register a type of expression in the animal. Let's see, like this. Okay, yeah. This is a good one. That's, to me, it's almost kind of like an expression of either religious or spiritual ecstasy, or martyrdom, or beatific kind of expression. So I was trying to find this sort of subdued expression, and sometimes they're more aggressive, but this had to do also with moving the lights around and placing the animals in the angle that gave me this type of expression. And again, these are kind of, they're frozen in this ambiguous non-place. So these two series work together well, I think, because ones are very particular, the others are general. In the other one, there's a lot of things happening visually, and these are just very focused. Okay, so this next series is more recent, and in a way, it's also about a relationship with nature, but this time is focused on the geological aspect of the world. And it also takes into account history, but not necessarily only in a Western way, because in Western history, there's a hierarchy of matter, which comes from before the Middle Ages, which is this idea that rocks and the mineral kingdom are at the bottom of creation, and then comes plants, and then animals, and then humans, and then it goes to theological. So it's angels and archangels, and then God. But in Eastern philosophy or Eastern history, the relationship to matter, or to stones and gems and the mineral kingdom, is different, because they regard the vibrational qualities of matter. So there's this idea of ambulance and divination through stones. So it's more esoteric, and it's more connected to that sort of thought. So this series is, to me, about the idea of order in the world, the idea of order in creation, or intelligence in creation, and then the idea also of intentionality of design, which you'll see now. It's not that apparent here, but it's just these photographs of geological landscapes. So, and of course, all landscapes are geological in the sense that, in the proper sense, but a forest is not the same as a cave. So I was interested in places where you could actually see the passing of time, of geological time. So it's also about this contraposition of human time, which is so short, against the much deeper time of the planet and the cosmos. Our race has been here for a very brief moment, if we compare it to the eons and eons and eons that matter has been forming and being destroyed and forming again, and the planets and the stars. And so it's this exploration of matter and the idea of the time of matter, the time of the cosmos, the time of the planet versus the time of our species. So in some of this, I'm trying to play with scale. Like these are pieces of charcoal, and they're very small, but the prints for the exhibition were quite large. And in this, like, you don't really know what the size of the thing is what that you're looking at. Or for instance, this one, people look at it and think it's like just a little tiny piece of sand on the beach, but it's a really, there's kilometers between this point and this point. So it's this idea of also macro, micro, the universe within the universe, etc. So I was working both in these geological landscapes in caves and also in the studio. These cubes of pyrite, they're 150 million years old, which is really a number that's impossible for us to comprehend. And it's a piece of matter that you can put in your hand and you can interact with it. And it's been in the planet for 150 million years. And it's perfectly cubical. And it has these intersecting volumes, which have double the matter inside, which is something physically very, very interesting. And nobody polished them. Nobody cut them. Nobody... They were created as they are. So there's this idea that in nature there's no straight lines, which is not true. We can see not only straight lines, but perfect angles and this kind of volumes appearing naturally that are created with all this patience of millions and millions of years, which to me is this form of kind of a pure existence, like unblemished pure existence. And I think we know very little about, you know, this sort of things in general. A little preview of what maybe I'm going to be working here. So this is kind of moving away from those concerns. This is something different. This is also recent, and this is more to do with, it's more modernist in the sense that it's preoccupied with just shape, color, context, or lack of context, and just the piece of art in itself. And it's not really talking about necessarily humanity or issues. It's more about form, but then it's also about abstraction and the way we turn things into abstraction. Okay, so maybe I have to give you a little context. This was done in a residence in the state of Oaxaca in Mexico. And the building there, it's by the sea, it's by the coast. The building is very particular. It was made by a Japanese architect. And it's all concrete. And very, yeah. So it's... The place is insane. It's really beautiful, but it's really stark because there's the sea, and then the gesture of the architecture is just one line. So maybe the sea is here and there's one line, which is this wall, and everything happens around that wall. Like the studios and the little houses and the gallery, and everything happens in these two parallel lines. And it's just concrete line. It's like very strong gesture architecturally. And it's very, it's almost like too much. Like it's been criticized a lot because it's like, it's not respecting the environment. It's just too strong. It's like almost something too utilitarian or too like, it has that aspect. I love it. I think it's beautiful, but So he built an observatory, a natural observatory there, which is this semi-sphere, it's kind of like squished sphere that is sitting on the sand and it's tilted like that. And it's looking at the sky. So you can just go there and sit down in a bench and watch.
All you see is the sky.
So I would go there maybe each morning or each afternoon and take one photo. And it's just a part of the observatory and the sky, that's all. So with this Polaroids. And then I noticed that because the film was so old and so expired, there were chemical interactions that happened there over the years that normally when you peel it apart, you have this and this, and you normally throw it away. But the negative is actually hidden here. It's behind all this. But normally it's all black. It's completely black. But because of the expiration that happened so long ago, all these things started happening there, randomly happening, and then this kind of very abstract drawings appeared. So to me it's really interesting, this idea that photography is always an abstraction, because you know there's been a lot of theory about this over the years. First we thought that photography was actually capturing reality, and that it was showing us reality. Mm-hmm. It was like a window to the real world. And then we kind of knew that, no, it's not a window to the world. It's not capturing reality. It's just as subjective or as lyrical or whatever as a painting or a sculpture or whatever it is. But because it has such perfect technical qualities, it kind of looks like you're seeing reality. But everything in photography is a decision on top of a decision, and it's a filter or an addition on top of an addition from the format of the camera, from the lens that we're using, to everything is distorting, shaping, changing, cutting reality. So this idea that photography is always an abstraction, and in a way it's an abstraction, but okay, so first we thought that photography was evidence of reality, like a document of reality. Then we were like, no, it's completely lyrical, it's completely subjective. But then a middle ground has to do with the fact that photography does need something real in the traditional sense of the word for it to happen. So in a way, it's a trace. It's a subjective trace of something. So it's a trace. So this idea that photography is a trace, when I saw this, was really interesting to me, because the trace, which is this, was making another trace. So what is already an abstraction was automatically, randomly creating another abstraction. So in a way, these images are abstractions of a second degree. So yeah, it's this idea of art kind of just happening and not necessarily being related to the idea of the author. It's more related to the act of seeing. So these pieces kind of just happen automatically, randomly, and they appeared through a process of abstraction from an abstraction in itself. In the show, I also wanted to emphasize the physicality of the medium and kind of the randomness. And so this medium is extinct. They no longer produce them. You can still find them, but they're not made anymore. So it's kind of also this idea of a relic. Okay, so one more series, and then I think that's enough, because it's quite a lot. But so this has to do with shape, form, scale, proportion, the elemental qualities of color, the elemental qualities of matter and object, and the relationship between objects, and kind of changing the context of things that are familiar or that have a normal purpose, and moving that purpose away or displacing that purpose and creating new relationships. And it also has to do with sculpture or architecture, in a way, the architectural or sculptural qualities of things, of objects, of matter. So this is just a very playful thing where I'm like building a few objects like this I made with clay, and then finding a few objects and putting them together. And also the angle of they're like sculptures that work as such through the camera. And the shadow, the shadow is very important. Yeah. So this is all done with natural light, with natural sun, really hard, very strong sun, Mexican sun. And then into these very strict, ordered compositions, I started placing things which were very random, or that they introduced an element of chance. So there's videos of this, which is easier to see. And maybe related to the last work I showed you, that is also speaking about the photography, the medium of photography, and the materials of photography. So these are filters. This is a photographic filter that's used. It was used on black and white film on the lens. So here the idea is to use it as an object that becomes another thing, and that just becomes this gesture of color. And these are just explorations of shape, size, proportion, shadow. So the idea is that the shadow, again, the angle of the camera has to be very, very specific, because if you raise it or lower it a little bit, this doesn't happen anymore. So the shadow is exactly like continuing the object. And this is the same object, exactly the same object, just maybe placed differently or at a different time in the afternoon. And then again, everything is kind of strict and ordered and square. And then you have an element that is behaving
badly.
Badly. Yeah. Yeah. It's doing whatever it wants. And then the element of chance. I mean, it starts with the jellos, but then I was doing videos of these rocks and I would have people help me like throw rocks into the frame to kind of just see. It's this idea of giving the frame as a finite universe and then just throwing stuff around and seeing what happens and what are the relationships. These are coconuts that I filled with clay. And then I put them in the kiln, so the shell burnt away and the interior space was revealed, which is kind of this idea of photography of positive and negative.
Mm.
So this is like making a 3D photograph negative of the object.
Yeah.
So the positive disappeared and the negative became the positive. And then these are styrofoam spheres. And I was just placing them on the concrete. And the little inclination from the floor or the breeze, a little breeze, would start moving them around. So again, it's about randomness. It's about chance. It's about supplying a set of parameters for things to happen and then letting them just evolve and happen by themselves. And I've been like walking around here in Fiskars and I think I still don't exactly know what I'm gonna do, but I wanna do some video that has to do with the snow, with the falling of the snow, and some things with color filters in the snow, in the landscape, that again, kind of brings in this idea of the contrast between artificial and natural and human involvement with nature.